1-1. Hammer to right. Pache is over, and he makes the catch. And for the first time in 19 years, the Atlanta Braves have punched their ticket to the National League Championship Series. As dominant of a pitching performance through two series as we have seen in baseball history.
Welcome to the OFR Farm Report, your look at the Atlanta Braves minor league system, brought to you by OutfieldFlyRule.com, hosted by Andy Harris and Matt Kritzberg.
Everybody, well, playoff baseball sure is exciting, isn't it, Matt?
It certainly is, especially if you're winning and you're still playing in the middle of October.
It's been a long damn time.
It has, but it's been a lot of fun so far, but I think this week's going to be a little more of a test. Probably won't have quite the level of success we've seen over the last couple of weeks, but remain very hopeful.
Yeah, I think you and I talked about this a little bit last week, but I don't think either of us were all that concerned about either the Reds or the Marlins. I think we both felt like the Braves were clearly the better team, despite what so many pundits were saying about how the Reds' rotation would be such a challenge and how the Marlins were such a scrappy team that knows no fear. When it comes down to it, usually the better team wins, and the Braves, especially the pitching, oh my God, it's been clicking on all cylinders.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of people on Twitter talking, trying to go trash talking about how a lot of pundits were talking about how bad the Braves starting pitching was coming into the series. Well, it was. Outside of Max Fried and Ian Anderson, it was pretty bad all season long, so that they had reason to say that. But seeing those two step up to their usual dominance, and then having Kyle Reich, it's really his coming out party, showing that he can be an established third starter. It's definitely turned some heads, especially among the national pundits now coming into the Dodger series. They're starting to get some attention.
Yeah, I am 100% behind the strategy that the Braves have shown of just never allowing their opponents to score. I think if we keep that up, I think we're going to be okay.
Yeah, I mean, I have to believe the winning percentage is something like 1,000 lifetime for teams that against teams that don't score any runs. I know it's an astounding stat, but I've heard that it exists.
Wow. What's the exit velocity on that?
69.
All right. That. All right. Well,
I'm sorry. That sounds like an NCRT ground ball.
Be nice. We shouldn't talk ill of the injured. Let's see. All right. So let's talk about the Dodgers coming up. I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about the Marlins. They're roadkill now. So moving on. The Dodgers, in many ways, are very similar to the Braves, except obviously they've been a little bit more successful in the playoffs recently. They swept both of their series. They've got a couple of MVP candidates in their lineup. They've got a Cy Young candidate in their rotation. And they've got a couple Rookie of the Year candidates in Dustin May and Tony Gonsolin. And I think this will be a fascinating matchup. And there is at least a couple things that I think the Braves are going to maybe possibly be able to exploit about the Dodgers. But overall, the Dodgers is probably the most complete team in the National League.
Yeah, for all of the shenanigans around the playoffs this season, how they were structured, getting all these extra teams in, and all the no days off during the series, it's come down to the two best teams in the National League. Nobody's going to dispute the Dodgers are, especially by record and all other facets, that they were the best team in the National League this season, and the Braves weren't too far behind them. So that's what I mean. Unlike the American League, that's what it's come down to. It's a couple of heavyweights going to just pound against each other for up to seven games over the next week.
And let's see, we got a game one matchup of Walker Buehler versus Max Fried. Now, by now, hopefully everybody that listens here is pretty familiar with what Max Fried has been able to do. Let's talk about Walker Buehler. I think obviously the enduring image that most Braves fans have of Walker Buehler is him giving up that grand slam to Ronald Acuna, and possibly the only highlight of the 2018 NLDS.
The 3-1, and Acuna swings. It's a high drive to left center field. Taylor back, at the wall, it is gone! A grand slam for Acuna!
But he's a really good pitcher, and what do you think the Braves are going to be able to do against Buehler in Game 1?
One of the issues he's had this season, he's had some blister issues, so I don't know if those may end up cropping back up again in the humidity of Texas. I mean, I don't know how the conditions will be inside that dome in Arlington, but I think they could, if they got to work those counts. I mean, they can't just go up there and sort of, I mean, hack away on the first pitch every time out, but they need to try to kind of wear him down. Although the Dodgers bullpen is pretty solid, you want to get past those starting pitchers because that's where they do the most damage.
Yeah, their relievers, Brusdar Graterol, Blake Treinen, Jose Urias, all these guys, they've been great all year and they've been great in the playoffs too. So kind of like the Braves, knocking out the starter doesn't necessarily improve your chances, though the Braves have been absolute murder on opposing bullpens this year. Game two is, I think, a fascinating matchup. Clayton Kershaw, now 32-year-old Clayton Kershaw, versus Ian Anderson, whom, as far as I can tell, nobody on the Dodgers has ever batted against, ever. And I'm talking about minor leagues, major leagues, and spring training. That's got to be a challenge for them.
Yeah, that would make sense. I mean, since their minor league teams wouldn't even really cross paths at any point. But I think for Clayton Kershaw here, his playoff legacy is at stake here. I mean, he hasn't had the best results in the playoffs in the past, and he's wanting a ring. So I imagine he's going to be really bearing down, trying to get the best results so he can help that team move forward to get to the World Series.
Well, unlike the Astros, the Braves probably won't know what pitches are coming, so that'll help them out.
Bang, bang, bang.
And Kershaw, we really kind of haven't seen him in a while. He's really kind of remade himself as a pitcher. His fastball now averages at only 92 miles per hour, which, you know, 20 years ago would still make him a top-notch velocity pitcher. But these days, that's, you don't even really consider that. And his hammer curveball, which used to be his signature pitch, he only throws it about 18% of the time now in favor of the slider, which is really his top strikeout pitch now. So it'll be interesting to see the Braves hitters maybe adjust to this kind of newer Clayton Kershaw. He had a fantastic regular season and he's been solid in the postseason, though they kind of sort of got to him and he kind of had it shortened outings both times. But then again, I think what we've seen is Dave Roberts not afraid to pull the hook out and go to this bullpen whenever necessary.
Yeah, he pitched 6 innings, I believe, against the Padres. So, I mean, like you said, I think they're wanting to get Buehler and Kershaw to go as deep as possible and then go back to them if needed for games 6 and 7. And then games 3, 4, and 5, they're going to alternate some variation of Dustin May, Julio Urias, and Tony Gonsolin.
Yeah, they have Dustin May as the starter for game 3, but that could be more of a 2 times through the lineup sort of deal. At least I think that's kind of how they've been using him more. And then Kyle Wright going up against him. So 2 rookies possibly going up against each other in game 3. And then after that, who the hell knows for both teams? I mean, I assume Bryce Wilson would go game 4. And then if there's a game 5, you know, would they bring Fried back on short rest? I think that's going to be kind of the question of the series. I do not expect a sweep on either side on this one. I expect this one will go at least 6 games.
And I think bringing back Fried on short rest may depend on where the series stands. If it's an elimination game to eliminate the Braves, they may look at bringing him back at that point. But say if the Braves are up by a game, might they go with another some sort of bullpen game and then bring back Freed on full rest for game six and Anderson possibly for game seven on full rest. So I think the first two games are about the only thing that's going to be set in stone. Then everything after that is just going to be kind of as the situation allows.
It seems unlikely that the Braves would ever do something like this, but I keep thinking about the Padres clinching on a game in which they had nine pitchers each pitch one inning. Is that possible? It seems unlikely, but you never know.
Yeah, of course, the Padres did it more out of necessity since they basically came into the series with no starting pitchers after Clevinger and Lamet got injured. So in the Braves' case, I would think they would want to go at least try to get some kind of starter in there to go at least once, maybe twice through the order. But like I said, that's going to depend on a whole lot of factors that we really can't take into account at the moment.
Yeah, that was a shame about the Padres. I was hoping they'd make a better show of it. But when your top two starters goes down, there's really not much you can do at that point. It was a shame it played out that way.
Yeah, and I think this series is going to come down to, unfortunately, with Mike Soroka's injury, that would have been a much more entertaining series. I mean, if you have Freed, Anderson, and Soroka that could go two games apiece, and then you're only using Kyle Wright for one start, that would be a much more entertaining and give us more of a chance kind of series. But now when you have Freed and Anderson for two starts apiece, you're going to have to use Wright for two starts and then mystery starter or Bryce Wilson for one start. I think it's those three starts where Wright and or Wilson will be in there. That's what's going to help decide this series.
Let's talk about the roster just briefly. Do you think the Braves make any changes to the roster before the game starts on Monday?
I don't really see it. I'm trying to figure out where that you can really make a changes. But I mean, I don't even see it. I mean, from the pitching standpoint, I think they're where they want to be. But I don't know if they may want to do something differently with adding a third catcher for a 7-game series, because you're not going to be able to run out Travis d'Arnaud for 7 straight games if it came to that. But I don't know if they want to add possibly a third catcher just in case, but that's the only possible scenario I see where they may change something. But I think of the 28-man roster, I'd say at least 26, 27 spots may be the same as it was in the division series.
Yeah, I agree. And also, wow, shout out to Travis d'Arnaud. I mean, what a playoff run he's been having. Not just with the bat, and he was great. If there had been an NLDS MVP, he would have been it just for his hitting. But just guiding these young pitchers through the lineups, the tremendous job he's doing behind the plate as far as play calling and stuff. And he made sure he shouted out Tyler Flowers, you know, with the game planning, and also catching coordinator Sal Fasano, who there was a great interview with David O'Brien on The Athletic. If you want to read more, but Sal Fasano has been a tremendous impact on this organization.
Yeah, and there's the news that came out just today on Sunday about JT Realmuto's possibly going to be looking for a $200 million contract. Good luck in this offseason. Especially being a catcher, going to be entering his age 30 season, and teams that have not exactly had the greatest financial seasons. But you can see that, hey, Travis d'Arnaud had basically the same offensive season as JT Realmuto did this season, and he makes a whole lot less money. He's going to be finishing the first year of a 2-year deal where he's only making a total of $16 million.
Yep. So kudos to Travis d'Arnaud. Kudos to Alex Anthopoulos for getting him in here. Along with the Marcell Ozuna signing, I mean, can you imagine what the team would be without those two guys? And I know the Cole Hamels deal kind of fizzled out for us, but all things considering, I think we're looking at a Braves offseason last year that it still kind of bums me out we didn't get a chance to see these guys for a full 162 games.
Yeah, but hitting on two out of those three free agent signings and hitting on those two in a big way, it speaks well of the work the Alex Anthopoulos and his staff did in the offseason to get those guys signed.
Oh, boy.
That ball doesn't have a chance to stick around. Another homer in the series for Travis d'Arnaud.
Yeah, and bringing back most of the bullpen, too. I mean, he kept Chris Martin. He kept Darren O'Day. which was a signing I was kind of questioning a little bit, but O'Day's been nails pretty much all season. And then adding Will Smith, who had a rough season, but has been absolutely lights out this postseason. So in a battle of the bullpens, I know the numbers-wise regular season Dodgers bullpen has been stronger, but I would put this bullpen up against theirs any day, especially with their closer, Kenley Jensen, having kind of a rough time of it.
Yeah, and there was a stat that came out today, I believe it was Mark Bowman, MLB.com, had put it out about Tyler Matzek, saying that Matzek's four-seam fastball during the season, he hit 96 miles an hour or higher on just 9% of his four-seam fastballs during the regular season. In the playoffs, that number's up to 65.7%. He only hit 27 fastballs 96 miles an hour or higher during the regular season. He's already hit 23 of them during the playoffs. I don't know what happened or what's changed between then and now, or if he's just putting a little more gas behind it. But I mean, a 96 mile an hour lefty, it's throwing that kind of gas, it's going to be hard to catch up with anything he's throwing.
Yeah, and kudos to whatever scout saw him with the Texas Air Hogs last year and then got him to the fold as a striper, which allowed us to have him in spring training where he was able to turn heads. You know, that goes to show you the value of scouts, of going out there and keeping all the stones turned up. So you just always you're looking for talent because you never know where it's going to come from and where you're going to need it.
Yeah, and in this new world of fewer scouts actually in crowds, I mean, that's the kind of guys that might get missed in the future.
Well, let's talk about the future a little bit. We finally got an instructional league roster for the instructional leagues this year. Now, the Braves seem to be doing this completely different from everybody else, especially everybody that trains in Arizona. They're having a full-on instructional league with teams traveling and playing each other. The Braves don't seem to be doing any of that. They have brought in a very small roster. I think I counted 27 players up to Gwinnett for basically workouts. I don't even know if they've got enough for full-on simulated games, at least not for more than a few innings. But it's an interesting roster. I think it highlights the emphasis they're putting right now on their youngest talent and wanting to get them in and get them some reps.
Yeah, it looks like they're mainly concentrated on the last couple of drafts, draft classes. There's a couple of guys from earlier classes beyond that. But obviously, this year's full four-man draft classes in there. You see a lot of guys from 2019. And you got some of the guys that were in the prospect player pool at Gwinnett. So they just basically got to keep hanging around until the next batch of guys showed up. I mean, you had Jared Schuster, who was in the player pool, Victor Vodnik, William Woods, and a couple of the others.
Spencer Strider.
Yeah, Spencer Strider, Vaughn Grissom, Jesse Franklin. So, I mean, a number of these guys are already around, but it's the other names that are coming in that are pretty interesting. A lot of them were expected to be there, but then you also got some of the guys that were free agent signings this year, too, like Cam Shepard out of Georgia was a part of this instructional league as well.
Yeah, because I'm a huge goober. I, of course, filled out my own anticipated instructional league roster, which was much bigger than this. I assumed that they would be going the full 30 or six, whatever, how many players you can have in camp. But I'm kind of not surprised they kind of skewed younger here. And we'll just go over the roster real quick. The catchers are Antonio Barranca, who is a amateur free agent signing, Ruspar Estrada, who spent last year with the Fire Frogs, and then Ricardo Rodriguez, who was with Rome last year. Baranka is someone I assume that they would want to bring in right away to start working out with the team. Estrada, I thought, was a possibility. I know he didn't have a great season last year, and he's a little bit older, but I believe the team is actually likes him a lot, especially behind the plate. The guy that surprised me a little bit was Ricardo Rodriguez. I'm not sure, but I think he might be either Rule 5 eligible or maybe, I guess he's not. He wouldn't have been invited, but I kind of thought he might be free agent eligible.
Yeah, it was kind of surprising to only see three catchers. I mean, that's obviously not a whole lot of work that's going to be getting done with the pitchers with just three catchers. So that kind of speaks to somewhat of this small roster.
And then the young hitters, we got first baseman Mekhi Backstrom, who I think was kind of an obvious selection. Infielders, we got Vaughn Grissom, like you mentioned, and Cody Milligan, who's a second baseman, who was a draft pick last year, a high motor guy who played with Danville. We got Carlos Paraguate, who was a surprise opening day Rome shortstop. He obviously faded in the background a little bit once we got Braden Shoemake in the draft, but he's still very young, only 19 years old. But he was promoted directly from Dominican Summer League up to Rome last year. And then Bo Phillip, the second round pick from last year, had a tough time in Danville, but I think he was overcoming an injury. It's good to see that he's going to be getting some reps. And as you mentioned before, the amateur free agent signing, Cam Shepard, out of UGA. Anything here surprise you or anybody that you wanted as far as infielders?
Well, the one glaring omission here is Bryce Ball. I don't know if I don't know if they just saw what they wanted to see out of him during the player pool, or if maybe he's got a nagging injury they want him to just kind of take care of. I mean, I don't want to speculate too far on that, but just a little surprising not to see him on here.
Yeah, and I guess if you weren't going to take Ball, I would think that maybe you would bring in, I don't know, a Griffin Benson, perhaps, just to have like a second first baseman. But I suppose one of the catchers that's not catching that day could play first base or something in inter-squad games.
Kind of wondering if this might be really the nucleus of the beginning of 2021's Rome or whatever's going to be passing for low A roster. I mean, some of these guys will obviously be of a higher level than that, but I think for the most part, a lot of these guys are going to be on that opening day roster.
Yes, very much so. I think you have hit the nail on the head. I think this is going to be the core of the Rome Braves, with a few exceptions here, most notably probably the draft picks. All right, outfielders, we got Michael Harris and Jose Palma and Brandon Parker and Stephen Paolini, and that's it. Oh, and Jesse Franklin, that you had mentioned earlier. So it's an interesting group. You got Harris and Franklin, obviously, that had been part of the 60-man player pool. But the guy that really kind of stuck out for me as someone I wasn't expecting was Jose Palma. Now, that's a high motor guy. I saw him in Danville and liked him a lot, but he was kind of more of a fourth outfielder for me. But here he is.
Yeah, that might be what his role is going into next season. Well, I'm sure they'll probably be between a DH and alternating players in and out between Parker, Paolini, and Michael Harris. And Franklin, I mean, there's going to be some room for all these guys to get some kind of playing time in.
Yeah. In fact, I suspect that Palma, Paolini, and Parker right there, that's going to be probably your low A outfield, wherever that is. With Harris and Franklin probably being high A. All right, moving on to the pitching. The starters I see here, you got quite a few. Ricky DeVito, who ended up in Rome last year. He was a college guy out of St. John's, but he is still on the kind of the younger side. He's only 22. And then you got Bryce Elder, who I think was the only draft pick that was not in the 60-man player pool. I don't think Elder was ever added, was he?
No, he wasn't.
Okay. Joey Estes, one of the prep school talents from 2019 that finished up in the GCL. Also, Jared Johnson is in that same boat, and Tyler Owens, who did get up to Danville, but those three guys very interesting, young, talented, both of them still just 19 years old. Really good to see them here. I suspect that when Low A starts again, those three will be the guys to look at that team.
Yeah, I think what you're going to see here with this pitching staff, it's going to be the core of the High A and the Low A starting rotations. I think most of them are between about 19, 21 years old. I think the only one that's probably the most established is Daisbel Hernandez, who was at High A Florida previously. I imagine he'll be moving up to Double A Mississippi to start 2021. But I think other than that, there's a lot of starting rotation talent in this instruction roster.
Yeah, and speaking of High A, as, in fact, you could almost kind of squint and see a High A rotation here. Jared Schuster, Spencer Strider, Bryce Elder, maybe Ricky DeVito, but also William Woods and Victor Vodnik on here could certainly play into that. And then a couple of names that we haven't really discussed much and may not be as familiar for people. Two left-handers, Gabriel Rodriguez, who missed all of last year after getting Tommy John surgery. He's a really interesting guy, was a pitcher and a position player, outfielder. He was drafted in 2018. And a lot of people were scouting him as an outfielder, but the Braves put him as a pitcher, left-hander that can touch 100 miles per hour is always interesting. But it's good that they have him back here getting reps. It obviously means his arm is obviously sound. And then Andy Samuelson is the other guy. Now, he was an 11th round pick in 2019, and 11th rounders are always interesting, because it's usually the first time that they get that teams get to pick somebody that's not their bonus won't be part of the player pool unless they go over slot. And a lot of teams take maybe a guy that they were looking hard at as someone maybe to take a player pool guy. And you know, Nolan Kingham was an 11th round pick. And Drew Lugbauer was an 11th rounder. Those are the kind of guys that scouts are very keen on. Samuelson was that for 2019. You didn't really hear much from him. He didn't pitch very much with the Gulf Coast League. But the noise out of the draft with him is he has this hammer curveball, and need to work on mechanics. He's a tall guy. He's 6'4", and he seems like he might be a project.
Yeah, he only made eight relief appearances in the GCL in 2019. So, he's definitely going to need some work. But I mean, that's the kind of guy you want to have to kind of fill out these kind of rosters. I mean, that they feel like there's something there that they can work on. Maybe it's a certain type of pitch, or maybe it's like you said, it has something to do with mechanics. Try to get him ready, and I guess what would probably be the Low A relief role for 2021.
Is there anybody that wasn't included that you were certain was going to be here?
No, I think Bryce Ball was the only one I was really eyeballing. It's like, okay, there's something going on here, but I mean, I don't think it's anything major to it. It's just, like I said, he's either maybe a nagging injury, or he got enough work in during the player pool segment, because mm-hmm. I think he was in there from basically the very beginning, so he got plenty of work in. And they may have also looked at it as like is almost kind of regressing a little bit, because he's been working against AAA MLB type pitching, and to have him kind of dial back to go up against High A and Low A type pitching might see it's kind of a don't want him to kind of go backwards any.
Do you see a scenario where Bryce Ball doesn't start in Double A next year?
I don't really think so. I mean, I think he's going to be destined there, especially with the kind of pitching he was facing in the player pool. And I think that might have been what was a lot behind it, is trying to get him ready for Double A.
I think the only surprise here, and it probably shouldn't have been a surprise, is the lack of Dominican players. I was hoping that guys that had stood out in the Dominican Summer League last summer, like Devi Estrada and, you know, some of the pitchers, I thought maybe they would be here, but now that I think about it, obviously you got the pandemic going on and you have severe travel restrictions going on, especially to and from the United States. So Everybody on this list, I believe, is American or was already in the United States, like Paraguate. So probably not a surprise. It is a little bit of disappointing that maybe some of those guys couldn't go ahead and come over and get some exposure to the mainland coaches and mainland players. But that's the world we live in today.
Yeah, but I think it's going to be a really good experience for these guys, especially getting to play in the at Gwinnett. I'm sure they're going to have most of the minor league organizational coaches or whoever's around still is going to be working hard with these guys, trying to get them ready for the beginning of 2021. But I think that's the, probably the whole purpose of this, it seems like, is to kind of get them a head start on the low A and high rosters for next season. And then the DSL and GCL rosters will kind of shake themselves out with next year's draft.
All right. Well, we're running a little bit long here, but there's a few other things we want to cover real quick. Maybe another reason why the roster is a little shorter than most is that they are having to pay these players for the Instructional League, and I think that's a first. And some of that may be due to the progression of a lawsuit that has been put forward by several minor league baseball players against Major League Baseball. The suit is to try to get at least a minimum wage earnings for minor league players and also get compensation for time spent in spring training and instructional league. These were issues that Major League Baseball tried to get resolved through the Save Our Pastime Act, which was passed along with the big tax reform from a few years ago. However, in a development, the Major League Baseball, it had been in this suit, it had been ruled by a lower court that that Major League Baseball players could make this a class action lawsuit against Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball appealed that up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court declined to consider it, which means that the lower court ruling will stay in effect. So it doesn't have anything to do with the merits of the case yet, which have yet to be argued, but it does mean that potentially if Major League Baseball loses this lawsuit and is forced to pay back pay to minor league players, that could be a huge amount of money going back to players.
Especially when you see what the scope of the case is, because it's based on participants in spring training, instructional leagues, or extended spring training in Florida or Arizona since February 7th of 2009. So it's going back 11 years, and that applies to basically anyone who's played baseball because everybody goes through spring training in Florida or Arizona. So anybody that's come through organized baseball in the last 11 years is going to be eligible for this. So I believe there's only a handful of players that are in the lawsuit right now, but they're talking about it could get up to thousands of players.
Yeah, there was a Twitter string about this, and a lot of baseball players that have now retired. You know, it's like, wait, what?
Yes, I mean, you're going back 11 years, you're talking about guys in their mid-30s now that are going to be jumping in trying to get in on this.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting. We'll follow that lawsuit. And just as a side, I hope they get paid.
Yep, certainly do. They deserve it. I mean, and that's the whole point, is just trying to get them paid for these time frames. Because a lot of people don't realize they don't get paid a dime for going to spring training, instructional league, or extended spring training. If you're talking about spring training, you're talking about nearly 2 months. In the case of Braves, that'd be at Northport in Florida. They're getting a per diem for food, and that's it. They're not getting paid any kind of salary for that time. They're down there due to their short season internship or whatever MLB's wanting to call it these days.
Right. And speaking of changes to the minor leagues, especially probably as a result of all this shenanigans going on, Major League Baseball hired a firm, Trinity Sports Consultants, and specifically the person running that, a gentleman named Peter Freund, who actually owns a couple of minor league baseball teams, including Memphis of the Pacific Coast League. Yes, Memphis is in the Pacific Coast League. It's a long story. And the Charleston River Dogs of the South Atlantic League. They were hired basically to help with the transition of moving minor league operations from St. Petersburg to the major league offices in New York City. Pretty much tells you right now, regardless of what's going on with negotiations for the professional baseball agreement, this thing is happening. Major League Baseball is going under the assumption that they're going to be running the minor leagues starting next year.
Yeah, and of course, the interesting part of this is how they refer to the minor league teams now in the press release, in MLB's press release. They refer to the minor league teams as licensed affiliates. And this is really, it's officially putting the minor leagues under the umbrella of MLB. So I'm sure we're going to be hearing about all these things one piece at a time. But, and I'm sure after the World Series, things will really ramp up where we start hearing about alignments and structure and how all the minor leagues are going to be working going into next season.
Yep. It's going to be a strange new world. And a lot of it is basically, I think, trying to get out ahead of some of this lawsuits. You know, if they end up having to back pay all this and they're going to have to, going forward, pay for instructional league and spring training, they're going to want to recoup that in some form or fashion. And, you know, shrinking the size of the minor leagues and is one way to do that.
Yeah, you got that right.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap this up. It's hard to believe, Matt, but there's a good chance by the next time we record this, we will know if the Atlanta Braves are going to the World Series or not.
Oh, I'm giddy. It's going to be a fun. Hopefully, it'll be a fun week, but I think it's going to be a lot more competitive than it was last go around. The Braves were a surprise division winner the last time these two teams faced each other. The Braves have a lot more depth. They're a lot better hitting team than they were last time. So I think it's going to be a lot more competitive. Last time it was more they had a puncher's chance. This time it's going to be kind of a Ollie Frazier type slugfest.
Yes, I can't wait. I anticipate a great series. All right. Make sure you check us out on Twitter. I am at K26DP. And Matt, you are at Braves Matt C. Or you can follow Outfield Fly Rule at OFR Sports on Twitter. Or come check us out on Facebook, Outfield Fly Rule Group. And make sure you check out outfieldflyrule.com as well. There's a new article up there now about the best performances in previous NLCs to get you pumped up for this series. So read all about, you know, the great NLCS heroes of the past, like John Smoltz and Steve Avery and Greg Maddux and John Rocker.
There's so many guys in the past, but hopefully we'll be designing our new generation of heroes this go around.
Yeah, I think there's going to be lots of them. All right. Hope everyone has a great week, and go Braves.
Have a good one.
No. Ni le bien qu'on m'a fait, ni le mal, tout ça m'est bien égal. Non, rien de rien. Non, je ne regrette rien. C'est payé. Allumer le feu, mes chagrins, mes plaisirs, je n'ai plus besoin d'eux. Balayer les amours avec leur trémolo, balayer pour toujours, je repars à zéro. Rien, ni le bien qu'on m'a fait. my